is my word, Jesus continued, for those of you who are listening. Love your enemies. Do good to people who hate you. Bless people who curse you. Pray for people who treat you badly. If someone hits you on the cheek, offer them the other one. If someone takes away your coat, don't stop them taking your shirt. Give to everyone who asks you, and don't ask for things back when people have taken them. Whatever you want people to do to you, do that to them. If you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? Think about it. Even sinners love people who love them. Or again, if you do good only to people who do good to you, what credit is that to you? Sinners do that too. If you lend only to people you expect to get things back from, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners to get paid back. No. Love your enemies, do good, and lend without expecting any return. Your reward will be great. You will be children of the highest. God is generous, you see, both to the stingy and to the wicked. You must be merciful just as Abba, your Father, is merciful. Don't judge and you won't be judged. Don't condemn and you won't be condemned. Forgive and you'll be forgiven. Give and it will be given to you. A good helping, squashed down, shaken in and overflowing, that's what will land in your lap. Yes, the ration you give others is the ration you'll get back for yourself. I've shared this quote from Mark Twain with you all before, but after that reading from Luke's Gospel, it bears repeating. Twain wrote, and by the way, don't believe about 3/4 of the Mark Twain quotes you see online. They're, but this one's Wikipedia, so I know it's true. I actually read this in a print book, so you know it's true. Twain said, I'm not, and he had not much good to say about Christianity, by the way. But he said, I'm not half so disturbed by the things Jesus said that I don't understand as I am by the things he said that I do understand. Big amen there for Mark Twain. And this reading from Luke is disturbing. It's uncomfortable. It is not practical. It's very popular in a lot of churches today to do practical theology that can make your lifestyle a little better. This is not a helpful lifestyle choice in our gospel reading today. It is radical, it is disturbing, it does not fit into our popular culture, and if some part of it did not leave you feeling stunned or guilty or a little cranky or offended, you are either spiritually dozing or you've become Mother Teresa. Congratulations. Jesus' sermon on the plain is dangerous, especially for Americans. Because it goes against two of our most ingrained cultural mythologies. The first is the myth at the heart of our economic system, which is that everything in life, and actually everything in death and everything in life beyond death, everything is transactional. Everything has a price. Everything is a purchase. Everything is the art of the deal. Everything and everyone has a price, including God, who can be easily bribed, apparently, by the right prayers or sending money to the right TV minister. Tit for tat transaction is at the center of our economy. And Jesus' words on the Sermon on the Plain run them down with a scythe. The other myth that Jesus takes down is the one at the heart of our culture, the myth of redemptive violence, where no problem that we might encounter is so entrenched or intractable, I'll learn how to talk here soon. No problem is so big or awful that it can't be taken care of by a craggy man with a large gun or a buff man in tights or a well-muscled woman with a martial arts degree or a kid with a wand or a lightsaber who used to bullseye womp rats in his T-16 back home. Almost all the movies and TV shows that we watch that reinforce our cultural values, what we used to call mythology, and all of it, someone just needs to get beaten up or beaten down or killed. You just need a climactic explosion or two, and then the frontier town is saved. Or Hogwarts is saved, or a planet or a galaxy is saved. Redemptive violence. That somehow beating up something else is going to fix whatever problems we have is at the heart of our media mythology. And it's in us. Well, Barbara and I just watched Black Panther. Awesome movie! But at its center is the claim that whoever wins the fight saves the world. Whoever beats up that one is the winner. Love your enemies, says the rabbi from Nazareth. Do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who hurt you. Turn the other cheek. Give to anyone who asks for something. Love even those who do not love you. Lend without expecting to ever get it back. Be compassionate as God is compassionate. The translation you have from N.T. Wright uses a different translation. Do you all remember what he said? Be merciful, just as Abba is merciful. Be compassionate as God is compassionate. Do not judge, do not condemn, forgive, give. At the end of that list, I always feel a little wilted and a little guilty and a little overwhelmed. Not because I don't understand what Jesus wants for me, but because I do understand all too well. And I'm afraid that I don't follow all or any of these commandments very well, and you're probably feeling about the same way. Love my enemy. Don't get angry? Hello, I can't do that. If that is what Jesus is saying God expects of me, requires of me to earn God's approval, then I'm going to fail. I can't do it. And in my Baptist brain is seared the King James version of Jesus' expectations for me in Matthew's gospel, where Jesus says, "Be ye perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect." That is humanly impossible. Which may be precisely Jesus' point. It is humanly impossible, all this kingdom talk. And if that is what is required to merit God's reaching out to us in love, then we are all in some deep situation there. But the amazing thing about God, this thing about God's amazing grace, maybe you've heard of that, is that God reaches out to us across our human-made barriers of sin and pain and brokenness. God reaches out to us even though we're not perfect. God reaches out to us not because of how great we are or how beautiful we are, because of our nature. God reaches out to us because of how great God is, because of God's nature, a nature of grace and forgiveness and reconciliation and atonement. And Jesus says, because of that given to us, we can offer it to others. Grace is God's gift to us, and it is a gift that we, in faith, can offer a broken world. There's one of the words in here that is translated as grace is, can you go to the next slide there, Robert? Charis. In N.T. Wright's translation that we read today, he translates it as credit, and I don't think much of that translation. The word charis, where Jesus says, and if you do good to those who do good to you, what grace is yours? If you lend to those from whom you hope return, what grace is yours? Charis is a broad and wonderful word. It can mean beauty and elegance and charm and grace and favor and goodwill and gratitude and thanks. Grace is acknowledging that everything we receive is not something we bought or earned. It's not transactional. There's no interest. There's no blue light special. There are no sales. Amazon can't deliver this by drone to your house. Grace. Grace says everything we receive is an undeserved gift, that we receive everything from a God who is kind and generous, even to those we feel don't deserve it. And God is kind and generous to us when we don't deserve it. Living in charis, in grace, is living in a state of radical gratitude for everything we have. And it is a difficult state to achieve because the values of our culture says that the world owes me something, that I can't be happy and satisfied unless my demands are constantly being met. Living in grace is living in gratitude, and that requires practice. And our world doesn't give us a whole lot of opportunity for practicing grace. There's another word in these Beatitudes. The Greek is oiktirmon, where Jesus says, be merciful or compassionate just as your Father is compassionate. Just as charis gives the lie to our transactional world values, oiktirmon, compassion and mercy, gives the lie to our myth of redemptive violence. Jesus says we don't meet violence with violence. That only begets more violence. But we meet violence with compassion. Now, compassion, our culture says compassion and mercy is weakness. That's what wimps do. Gandhi, King, and Jesus showed us that compassion is not weakness, compassion is power. Martin Luther King and his fellow civil rights marchers had to endure hatred and violence and persecution without striking back. It's the same power that allowed Gandhi and Mandela to change the course of their nations from retaliation and vengeance to forgiveness and reconciliation. That power allows 1,000 nameless people of faith to not be defeated or defined by their fears or their angers or their feelings of revenge, but to be defined by what brings life and love. According to Jesus, vengeance is weakness. weakness of body and weakness of faith because you are not depending on God's grace and compassion to mend things. So you call in the craggy guy with the gun who wants to ask if everyone feels lucky. Punk. Here's the thing that makes it hard to practice compassion is that loving our enemies may never change our enemies. But it will change us. Opening our hearts to forgive those who've wronged us won't make the wrong disappear. But it will keep us grounded in God's love instead of being grounded in feelings of revenge and resentment. Blessing those who curse us is the best way I know to keep those curses from taking hold of our hearts and eating us up from the inside. Can you hear Jesus' words a little bit differently now? In the Beatitudes, Jesus is not saying, here are a dozen impossible things you have to obey in order to earn God's approval. That's being transactional again. Rather, he's saying, you are loved, brothers and sisters. You are loved beyond your wildest imagination. You are loved. You have been given a gift more precious than you can ever know. You are a beloved child of God. How else can you respond but with gratitude and grace and love and a lifestyle that reflects that precious gift? Martin Luther, the old German guy. Faith does not require information, knowledge, and certainty. Faith requires a free surrender and a joyful bet on God's goodness. A joyful bet. That's actually a little transactional, isn't it? I wonder what the odds are given. 12 to 1. 1,000,000 to 1. He continued, faith is possible because love works beyond our deserving. Daniel Day Williams said, we can begin to walk feebly in the way of love because the way has come to us. But how do you do that? Day to day, we tend to get more exposed to people whose lives are run by resentment and revenge and anger and frustration and trying to get even. Again, it's that transactional thing. I've had bad things happen to me, so to even it up, I need to do bad things back. It's a twisted set of scales. When I was in grade school, I bought a book that Chuck LeClaire would enjoy called 101 Elephant Jokes. I think it got a Pulitzer Prize. It was brilliant. How do you keep an elephant from charging? Oh, you got the book too. How do you know an elephant is in your refrigerator? You can see his footprint in the cheesecake. Okay. They're mostly stupid. But there was one in there that was decidedly philosophical. And it stayed with me for years now. How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. One bite at a time. Michel Lotito was a French entertainer, born in Grenoble, famous for deliberately consuming indigestible objects. He came to be known as Monsieur Mange-Tout, Mr. Eat-It-All. He was diagnosed with something called pica, which I know some pregnant women get. What's that?
Kids get it from eating lead, I believe. Yeah.
Lead paint. And that causes them to actually want more stuff. Okay. So this guy apparently has pica. He has eaten 18 bicycles. One bite at a time. Most famously, he ate a Cessna 150 aircraft in 2 years. One bite at a time. And indeed, that's how he divides his projects up. And these are art projects for him. I watched a video of him. He's got a bicycle here. It's up on a stand. He takes some wire cutters. And one bite at a time. He paces himself. That's the key. He eats 2 pounds of metal a day. Every day. One bite at a time. And in 2 years, the airplane was eaten. He died at age 57. His death certificate said natural causes. I don't think so. Here's the thing. If a person can do something as idiotic yet amazing as eating an airplane in 2 years, one bite at a time, maybe a disciple of Jesus can do something beautiful yet amazing and change one's own heart and the heart of the world, which is much bigger than an elephant, one love at a time. One love at a time. Maybe we can begin to walk in that way of grace and love and forgiveness one step at a time, one love at a time. In this moment, when we are confronted with this enemy, this time, we pray for him and love him instead of trying to figure out how to get back. The effort that takes. What's the saying? The revenge is a dish best served cold. Oh, that just makes me so sad. That's not even in the heat of the moment. That means you have to let that ferment somewhere. Where is that? I'm not sure. In another moment, we might be asked to be merciful to someone who's wronged us, where we show mercy and forgiveness. And in another moment, when someone curses us, we return a blessing. One moment at a time, one step at a time, one love at a time. Sometimes one slow, painful love at a time, and sometimes we get a few steps back. But we're following someone whose footsteps are ahead of us. We've seen them. We know where they lead. Jesus promises to be with us and hold us each step of the way. And the power to love and forgive, remember, is his, not ours. We don't have to dive deep into a well of superhuman forgiveness on our own. We have a well outside us that we can dip deep into. Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, or the Sermon on the Plain, or Beatitudes, or whatever you want to call it, is not practical theology. It is not a lifestyle accoutrement that makes you comfortable in a suburban landscape. It's not practical. It will make you look foolish and gullible. This theology is not practical, but it can and has changed the world. Maybe by following one love at a time, these difficult commandments, we might become so transparent that Jesus shines through us and others can come to know him one step at a time, one love at a time, and we just might see the kingdom breaking through one heart at a time.